Hi, hello. We have a fun episode of the Dunker Spot loading for you. We flip the order today. We start with the NBA. We start with a Southwest Division preview. If you are a fan of the Rockets, the Grizzlies, the Mavericks, the Spurs, or the Pelicans, this is for you. And at the end of the pod, we salute the Las Vegas Aces for winning their third championship in 4 years, and also some praise for the Phoenix Mercury for their run. We hope you enjoy this episode. Hi, hello, and welcome to another episode of The Dunker Spot. We are part of the Yahoo Sports Network. I am your host, Nikias Duncan, and joining me as always is my co-host, the always excellent Steve Jones Jr. Steve, how you doing, sir?
Feeling good, feeling great. Happy to be here, excited to be here. Thank you, Dunkers, for once again embracing your bounce. It's time, Nikias, to hoop it up.
It is indeed time to hoop it up, Steve, and time for a little bit of a flip of the show format as we're getting closer to the NBA season. So as we are continuing to roll through these division previews, we are starting with the division previews. And in the second half of the episode, we are saluting the Las Vegas Aces. We're saluting the Phoenix Mercury for their great season. We have W Award news as well. So that's going to come in the second half. And naturally, moving forward, we're going to be primarily on the NBA side unless we get some news. So just wanted to give you the quick heads up before we got rolling. But today, Steve, we roll with the Southwest Division. We go out west, and we start with the Houston Rockets, who are coming off of a 52-30 season. They were 12th in offense, 5th in defense, 7th in net rating, close to the top five. They had a bit of an active offseason. They added some guy named Kevin Durant. I think he's pretty good at basketball and has been for a long time, so that's naturally going to be very interesting. But in terms of my overall excitement level for this group and where it starts for me, it's kind of the younger guys, honestly. After the summer of Shingun, I am excited to see how much of that carries over into the regular season. Do we get the legitimate, like, all-NBA second team season for him this year? Amen Thompson, after an electric season last year, naturally, like, what is he adding to the bag? In light of the Fred VanVleet injury, I would expect more on-ball usage for him. We've certainly seen more on-ball usage for him during preseason play so far. How much growth does he showcase? More so as an interior scorer. What does the pull-up jumper look like? What does the floater look like? But the KD of it all is obvious. But beyond that, Alperen Şengün, Amen Thompson, Tari Eason, Jabari Smith Jr., that young collection of talent is really exciting to me, Steve, and I want to see how they grow this year. What excites you about this Houston group?
Number one, I'm not surprised that you immediately went with youth on the Houston Rockets. Number two, I am a little surprised you did not mention Reed Shepard to a degree that you were going to. A little stunned there.
He's coming a little bit later in my Houston thoughts.
Oh, my. All right. For me with Houston, it is a combination of what they have built and where they're trying to go. And how do they mash it all together? You get Kevin Durant, that puts you into a different stratosphere to looking to compete in the Western Conference. Obviously, we know the Houston Rockets are built on defense. Mm-hmm. That is their base. Activity, physical, switching, on and off ball, keep the ball in front, force turnovers, get out and run. That's what they do. That can stick around. Obviously, losing Fred VanVleet is a big deal. They're going to miss his leadership. They're going to miss the little things he does defensively and offensively. They're going to miss his pull-up shooting. But they can still replicate a lot of their success with their base. And that was part of what we talked about with the Kevin Durant trade. They got Kevin Durant without giving up the bulk of what is making them who they are and who they can be. Mm-hmm. So it's just how this come together. How's that activity look defensively? Can they cause havoc on that end? And then offensively, you have an opportunity to kind of reshape things. Amen Thompson, obviously, this is a chance for him to have what people love to call a breakout season. Mm-hmm. And so his athleticism pops off the page, but his paint touches are going to be huge. Him running in transition is going to be key. His ability to get in the paint and draw defenses and kick it out, or if you're going to play drop, I can still get in the paint. I can go one-on-one. I can eat up that space like we've seen Zion and Ja Morant do, and I can still attack and finish. Alperen Şengün, Rockets fans forever spoke about, hey, we got to play through Şengün more. Well, guess what? You're going to see a lot more of it. So now you have some more cutting. So you have some more movement here. There's an opportunity for Jabari Smith to grow. And the key for me with Kevin Durant is he can play within the flow offensively. I don't think he gets enough credit for that. So when he's in there, you don't necessarily have to start the possession with Kevin Durant has the ball in his hands. You can, but you don't have to. You can put him off ball, and you can run him off screens. You can have a two different actions, and now Kevin Durant gets the ball late in the clock. So that's just going to allow natural growth. Alperen Şengün, someone you mentioned, you'd put them all over the place. So I'm intrigued to see how they build this out. And I think if they are able to combine the defensive base we've seen with improved consistency offensively, there's no reason they can't knock on the door of contendership in the NBA this season.
No, I think that's all fair. And I think what's made one of the many things that has made Kevin Durant so great throughout his career is that, to your point, he can just fit in a variety of roles. You can ask him to do just about anything. Like last year was not an all NBA season for him, ended up kind of barely missing the cutoff for the games played minimum. But pick and rolls, high efficiency. Post-ups, high efficiency. Isolations, high efficiency. You talk about catch and shoot threes and him just working off screens in particular, high efficiency. Like, he just gets baskets everywhere. And so that does give you a level of versatility offensively to where he's Kevin Durant, so duh, you're working him into your system. But you don't have to completely bend what you are already doing to his will, because he can just kind of slot in and just be him in a multitude of contexts. So like that part is exciting. And that's where it turned even more to like, okay, what is Alperen Şengün going to look like this year? Like, obviously the answer is good, because he is a very good basketball player. But like the fact that you don't have to make a Kevin Durant offense is like, okay, how are those two going to play off of each other? How many cross screens are we going to see KD set for Alperen Şengün? What kind of off-ball screen, like just basic wide pin downs, is Alperen Şengün going to set for Kevin Durant? And how do teams want to deal with that? How often is Alperen Şengün bringing the ball up the floor and then flowing into something? And like, where is Kevin Durant going to be spaced? Like, that part is going to be exciting for me. And then just quickly on Şengün, just 22-10-7 during EuroBasket play this year. Like, it's, he was an absolute monster. Like, he just seems primed for a big season. So that part is going to be fun. The other thing I'd add on the excitement front before getting into the next part of this, surely, assuming good health, we're just going to see more Tari Eason, and he is just one of the most electrifying players that we have in the league. He's playing 130% all the time. He is flying around defensively. Quietly good shot creator as well in the half court, can get to some pull-ups and get to some drives, but like in transition, he's an absolute monster. I am just excited to watch Tari Eason play basketball, so I will also sprinkle that in. As far as your biggest question mark heading into the season, Steve, or biggest questions, where would you go on the Houston front?
Biggest questions is, how do you handle when your offense slows down? How do you handle when team, you don't necessarily have it on that end of the floor? Mm-hmm. Can you be consistent defensively? So we're talking about the Rockets as if they're going to continue with the success they had last year defensively. And I think in the preseason, we've seen a lot of good things, a lot of good switches, a lot of good activity. Alperen Şengün being able to be put on wings, and he does his job very well when he's off ball as far as calling out switches, scramming people out of matchups. But can you keep your pace and tempo up? Can you avoid, you know, the stretches where you score 2 points in 4 minutes? Do you have enough shooting? Do you have enough shot creation overall as a team to kind of handle some of those tough matchups and tough moments? Because while they're primed for success, you could look at Amen Thompson and say, hey, we're going under, or we're switching. You could look at Alperen Şengün and say, go ahead and get yours. We're not going to double. KD's KD, but okay. Reed Shepard, are you going to shoot? Are you going to pass? What are you going to do? We're not really worried about the bench. Like, there are moments where it's going to be interesting to see if the league cooperates or how they operate with them. And I want to see how they handle that, because that's part of forming an identity, right? It's one thing to have the aspirations. Another thing to be able to execute it night in, night out. So that's probably where my concern lies. Are they ready for what teams throw at them as the season goes on?
No, I like that you started there, because like the biggest question that I have is how healthy is the group going to be? But like, that is inherent to literally every team we're going to talk about, so I don't feel the need to say that every episode. So aside from that, the top question that I had was, what is going to be the ideal pace of this group? What is going to be the overall tempo of this group? Because if you are leaning into more Şengün as a hub, and obviously you have the Kevin Durant of it all, that should lead to better half-court play. Like, as I mentioned at the top, they were 12th in offense last year, but a lot of that was driven by what they did in transition. The half-court offense was pretty inconsistent. In adding KD and leaning more into Şengün, like, how much does that affect the overall pace of this group? I'm saying pace more than tempo, because you can obviously have a slower pace and still just be zippy in the half-court. We're coming off a W season where the Minnesota Lynx were just that, right? But like, how often are they going to run with this group? I think they still have the personnel to do it, but how much does KD affect that part? And within that, this is going to be, again, more on-ball onus for Amen Thompson. Like, I think he could play a big part in spearheading a lot of these transition opportunities if they're going to maintain that. Because under Ime Udoka, they have pretty much been around, like, between 13th and 17th, 13th and 18th in pace during his tenure. So, like, any hopes of being on the lower end of that or getting into the top 10, I think, is going to be driven by Amen Thompson. You can quell some of the half-court creation questions that you may have about him taking on more quote-unquote point guard duties if you are running more. And so it's not even like a bad thing in a sense for me. It's just more so, where is this actually going to land? And within that, like, what is the offense going to look like? How do they kind of flow into things? How quickly can they gel and mix, you know, the Amen of it all and the Shingun of it all and the KD of it all? Because skill set-wise, it should mesh, and I expect it to mesh. But is that going to be, oh, by game 5, oh my goodness, look at the Rockets? Or is it going to be more game 11, game 12 before they really start to find that balance?
Well, I think the one thing when you talk about transition, obviously we've talked about the defense and how important that's going to be to get them out and running. But I think one thing you've seen is they get a stop. Amen Thompson runs.
Mm-hmm.
So he's not waiting for the ball. Someone else is going to get the ball and throw it to him, and they're going to run that way and kind of keep pressure on you. So I think the youth that they have is going to allow them to push and run. I think it's going to be interesting to see where – I'm more interested in where Amen Thompson is when he doesn't have the ball.
That's fair.
Than the onus of him having to be a point guard, because I don't think he's going to have to be a point guard. He'll initiate more. Probably be involved in more actions, more handoffs, pick and roll. But the burden isn't going to be on him to create everything.
Yeah.
So I think it's going to be, okay, where does he dive? Where does he cut when Shingun has the ball at the elbow or in the post? Because he's going to be a help point when he doesn't have the ball in his hands. But he's really good at kind of finding the different cracks and nooks and crannies of a defense to kind of get open, and Shingun's going to find him. So I think that's where it gets interesting. I think your how do they build it out is going to get interesting. Shingun post-ups, is there movement around it? Are we going to do any sort of post splits? Is anyone going to cut? Are we going to stand and watch and hope that the defense helps? What does that look like? When Kevin Durant has it going, he can get it in a lot of different areas, but where are you going to put him? Where do people stash around it? How do you deal with those doubles if they come? Like, I think there's just a lot of intriguing questions as far as you mentioned, what do they do offensively at certain times? But I'd like the build of what they've had so far, and they have the pieces. Now, rotationally, gets interesting. What's the second unit look like? Who kind of gets the first crack to lead them to a degree? Is this a time where Jabari shines? Is Kevin Durant getting extended minutes? You know, you can only play Shingun so much. Is Amen going to lead that group? So how do they build that portion of it out? Because you have a level of depth. You have pieces that you believe in for your system. But can they kind of mash things together and then get back to their starting lineup or get back to the lineup they feel is doing the best at the time? That's where it gets interesting.
Okay, I like it. I like it. Before we get into the breakout portion, I would bounce off of something that you said about how wondering how teams are going to treat this version of the Rockets. Last year, teams switched about 21% of their on-ball actions last year. That was 28th in the league, very low rate. Thinking back to those Suns teams, especially towards the end of their tenure, like teams switched a good bit against Phoenix. So would not surprise me if we see an uptick of switching against Houston to try to counter some of the things they get into. But again, the personnel is as such, they should be able to win against those. But I am keeping an eye on that front just to accentuate what you said there, Steve. Now, as far as breakout candidates or general X factors for this group, this is where I bring Reed Shepherd into the fold.
Really? You're putting the big pressure on Reed Shepherd, huh?
I don't want to put a ton of pressure because, again, they're top seven, but like they're top six or so. They're all so good. This is still a context in which Reed can be more of a bonus because they can run offense through a variety of players. And again, if their defense is good and they're forcing turnovers, they're just running. And so you don't have the same onus for that half-court creation. But if you're telling me, you know, we get to like March and we're saying Reed Shepherd has just been very good this year, then we're probably talking about the Rockets as at minimum the 2 seed, assuming health elsewhere. And so for me, I think the feel is there. I think the shooting touch is there. I think he should absolutely get more playing time this year. I'm expecting him to hold up defensively. If I end up being wrong about that, then I will just take the L. But from the little bit I've seen from him, I don't doubt that he can navigate or at the very least not know where to be defensively. And within this ecosystem, that's kind of all you need because of all the length that they have around him. And so if you do get some of the aggression from him offensively, I think he's going to be fine overall. And if he's just firmly good for them, that takes some of that quote unquote point guard responsibility off of Amen. You know, bouncing off your question about what the second unit is going to look like, he can slot more into that and take on more ownership of the offense there. And so, like, I think he could be a pretty big swing factor for this group. And the team is still built as such as where, like, they don't need whatever the B plus or better version of Reed Shepherd is for the season to be a success. So it's still a fun middle ground for him to be in, but I think he could change some things if he is just good.
I think that's fair. And let's stick with Reed Shepherd before I go to mine. Okay. Because Rockets fans, relax. Take it easy on the young fella. Don't put all the weight on him. What you've seen in preseason is a young guard getting an opportunity and trying to figure out, ooh, how do I do my job? Because, buddy, I need to do my job. Mm-hmm. And so you're seeing the moments where he gets the ball in transition off the stop, and he's looking, where's Amen? Where's Kevin Durant? Where's someone? That won't last forever. There are moments where he comes off a screen and he has space, and you're thinking he should take that shot. He's like, nope, pocket pass. Where's the skip? That's just a natural progression for a young player. So don't necessarily think that that's going to be what he does all the time. And it's a good quality to have to a degree because he doesn't have to carry all that weight. He just has to do his job. Mix in some pull-up shots. Don't turn the ball over. And the most important thing that I've liked in the preseason, hold up defensively. Don't be the person that they pick on. It's going to happen just because naturally, if you are in a lineup with Kevin Durant and Amen Thompson and Jabari Smith Jr., it's you or Shingun, buddy. Like, I'm sorry. That's just how it's going to be. But I think he's done a good job of working, trying to keep the ball in front. I think off ball, he's been pretty good at rotating and finding different areas to help what the Rockets do on that end. If he holds up defensively and he does his job, mixing some makes, what more could you ask for? So I don't expect this 15 a night explosion, you know what I mean? But appreciate the progress that he makes during the season as opposed to he's supposed to be doing X, Y, and Z. He's trying to figure it out.
Yeah, like I think that's where, again, like I'm kind of excited for Reed. Like some of the flashes of preseason as you're talking about just kind of holding up and containing. They've certainly been there. Like the Utah game in particular was a pretty funny one. Like he had the strip down on speed. He had like the block three on speed that just went right back to speed and he hits a three. And it's just like, well, that's just kind of unfortunate. So like it's been some of that. But he's mostly done his job and he's done a quality job of like funneling the ball inside the size. And as long as you can do that, he should be A-okay. And so hunt for the shot because he can shoot. He should be fine. The other young player I'd bring up here, I guess more X factor to me than like breakout candidate, but Jabari Smith Jr. did get himself paid. He's been a good defender. We have seen stretches where he has been a high-level shooter. We have also seen stretches where the shooting has been a little bit underwhelming and some of the mid-post creation has been inconsistent for him. If he's ever, I worry less about the defense. I think with a healthier season, he should just be kind of back to what we saw a year and a half ago from him to where very switchable. You can just stash him on guard sometimes, like not going to trust you to navigate screens against guards, but you can play with the matchup since you're already playing with them when it comes to Shingun and stuff like that. He unlocks a level of cross matching for you. And so the defense, I'm not super worried about. What level of shooter is he actually going to settle in as? Are you going to be 37, 38, 39%? From three? Are you going to at the very least be a high, high level catch and shoot threat? If you can just bank that in, I'm in on Jabari. I think the defense is going to be there. I'm excited as we get into some lineup talking a little bit, just what he can help unlock on that front. But just consistency and health for Jabari Smith Jr. I think will play a big part in this Houston season. So that's the other guy that I would mention on that front.
My brother, I'm glad you said that. Because my X factor is Jabari Smith Jr. And I am intrigued by what he can do. There's a clearer runway for him in Houston now to just kind of operate and attack offensively. It's all about mindset to me. And so I've liked what I've seen so far in the preseason as far as looking to hit people. So if I get a matchup, I'm going to the post. I'm trying to get a post up. I'm trying to hit first. I'm not going right to the mid-range or the fadeaway. I'm trying to get there. So can we add some downhill drives? Can we get some paint touches, catch and shoots? Can he have the right shot selection to be impactful in the right moments? And can he play with confidence? I think he's got an opportunity to do that because of some of the departures that have been there. Not that he couldn't before, but I think it's just a clear path for him to be himself. He knows he's going to be there. So let's see what that looks like. Because if he can hit offensively and be someone who is able to attack switches, that's going to be a big thing for Houston. And then defensively, I think he's really important to what they do defensively. His ability to switch on and off ball. I've loved the mindset. I've loved his ability to kind of keep the ball in front, guard multiple positions. That helps in those matchups where Alperen Şengün has the guard non-shooter. And so Jabari Smith can guard this person. If he has to switch, he can hold up in this matchup. The better he is, I think the better the Rockets are. So that's the person where I'm eyeing, okay, if he takes just even a miniature leap and it's consistent, I think the Rockets really, really feel good about where they're at.
Yeah. I think just broader strokes, he had to have been like the happiest person about this offseason. Just the Jabari Smith, I am a super competitor. I am young, but I'm also the adult in the room. It's kind of permeated the early portion of the build. And now it's just like, whoo, playoffs, elite defense. We got Kevin Durant now. We're all about winning. We're locked in now. So I am happy for him with that aspect. Like, oh, we're a serious basketball program. And now we can just go about winning. Because that just seems to be what he's about. So I love that for him. Okay, Steve, it's time for some lineup talk before we move to the next team. What do you think Houston's best lineup is going to be this season?
Best lineup? Well, real quick, I think the fun of Houston is the different combinations they can come up with. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, they have some lineup versatility with Kevin Durant. They have some lineup versatility because they have a bunch of wings, and they have a bunch of tall people they can throw on the floor. So this is probably going to double as a lineup that I think is going to be the best and the lineup I want to see the most. Mm-hmm. Give me Amen Thompson. Give me Tari Eason. Give me Kevin Durant. Give me Jabari Smith Jr. Give me Alperen Şengün. Let's just be big and you deal with it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think that is fair. Like, we're pretty much aligned on that front. Like, the best lineup for me, I knew, at least for trying to get projections together, like, I was pretty certain that it is going to include the trio of Amen Thompson, Tari Eason, and Alperen Şengün. They were over a plus 14 and over 400 minutes last year. Like, those three just played really well together. High floor defensively, et cetera, et cetera. And so Kevin Durant naturally factors in because duh. And I was like, okay, who's going to be the fifth to where like it pops in the net rating? So I was trying to get like moderate minute. I thought too much about this, but like, okay, who plays enough minutes for this to matter? Who's going to win those minutes? I landed on Aaron Holiday as my fifth.
Huh?
I landed on Aaron Holiday. I think this is going to be like a smooth, like they play 113 minutes together or something like that. But Aaron's going to shoot. He's going to add to their defensive ball, the high ball pressure defensively. He's not going to be high usage, so that means more of Şengün, more of KD, more of Amen, et cetera. I think the defense is going to be strong. They're going to shoot well in that lineup. I think that's going to be their best lineup this season.
Give that to me one more time.
Aaron Holiday, Amen Thompson, Tari Eason, Kevin Durant, Alperen Şengün.
Nothing beats a Jet 2 Holiday.
No shot. You know, see, if I was a worse person, I would have set that up just to make that joke. That just did not register for me. I'm just doing the nerdy. Which group is going to play at least 100 minutes and they're going to like win their minutes. So I think that's going to be like their best functioning lineup. The lineup I want to see is exactly yours. Amen, Tari, okay. Jabari, KD, Şengün. And then secondarily, Amen, Jabari, KD, Şengün, and Steven Adams, which I'll quickly note. I have it in my notes here, a plus 27.3 net rating in 255 minutes with Şengün and Steven Adams on the floor together last year. The quartet of Amen, Jabari, Şengün, and Adams were plus 36 in 44 minutes last season. Small sample, but that is a lot of winning. And so.
Well, real quick before we move. Mm-hmm. Salute to Ime Udoka and the Rockets for seeing the success of Şengün and Steven Adams and saying, you know what? Let's double down and have a different variety of that. Clint Capella, come on down.
Come back.
So just in case you poke at this double big lineup, we have another one, and it's coming with zone.
It's such a good bit. But yeah, so that is where I land on the lineup front. And now, Steve, we can move to the entire division is interesting, so I don't want to say just firmly the most interesting team in the division, but it's certainly the one that I've thought the most about so far, because I don't know who's going to be healthy when, and the roster is also still kind of fun with some of the role pieces. Let's talk about the Memphis Grizzlies. coming now, off of
now, this is very funny because I have driven the Memphis Grizzlies train on this podcast for several years, mm-hmm. and in this specific year, Desmond Bane is gone, everybody's hurt, and Nekias Duncan raises up from his chair and says, "I would like to talk about the Memphis Grizzlies."
It's a fascinating group with a lot of questions. But last year they were 48-34. You wouldn't know it by how the season ended. Sixth in offense, 11th in defense, sixth in net rating. You wouldn't know it by how the season ended. And we enter the year, and my excitement level for this group starts with ideally the return of Ja Morant and Jaren Jackson Jr. and more responsibility for the both of them because Desmond Bane is no longer there. And I think I naturally gravitate more to Ja Morant in this just because he missed time. Just the last 2 years of the Ja Morant experience has been up and down for a variety of reasons that we don't have time to get into right now. But at the end of the day, that is a very talented basketball player. That is someone that can bend defenses to his will because of how easily he can get into the paint and because of the playmaking blend that he has. And I think he has naturally, you know, taken accountability for his role in what the last 2 years have been. But also, he's heard the noise, and a spiteful Ja Morant is an even better version of Ja Morant on the basketball court. And so now, whenever the ankle is good to go, there were some questions about if he was going to be ready for the regular season opener. Ja Morant hit us all with a day tweaking with some of their concerns. So I would assume that means he's going to be ready for the regular season opener for Memphis. But a legit revenge toward Ja Morant just seems like a fun time. And if there's any sort of consistency with the pull-up jumper, mid-range or from three, to complement the drives and the playmaking, this is once again going to be a Memphis group where we hit January. And it's like, wait a minute, how are they the three seed right now? But I'm excited to see Ja. I'm excited to see Jaren Jackson continue to grow as a half-court creator. We saw some really big strides be taken from him last year. And said this recently on the Low Post. I'll say it here again. Just kind of wild to see like all of his award all of his award stuff just disappear by the end of the season because of how it ended. It just erased the first like 85% of his season because he was just all defensive good or a DPOY good, honestly. And offensively was scoring well enough, scoring efficiently enough. Like I thought he was firmly going to be on an All-NBA team getting to like March, and a lot of change in Memphis. But either way, I'm very excited about the top two whenever they are available.
I think it is going to be, what leap does Jaren Jackson Jr. take if there's another one in there? Mm-hmm. How much opens up for Ja Morant? And can they build a base offensively for everyone else around those two? I think that is the intrigue for me. Okay. That is what I'm looking to see. Can Memphis kind of just operate in a zone where in the half court, we have movement, we can keep pressure on you, we can really hurt you, and you have to defend Ja Morant, and you have to deal with Jaren Jackson Jr. Can they kind of blend that together? That's been the thing for me for ages, it feels like.
Certainly the history of the pod.
Is it going to come together in a way that allows Memphis to kind of take off? They look different, they feel different, but they do have the same mindset. So defensively, we know they're going to be after it, they're going to get after it, they're going to fly around. Can they hold up on that end? They get stops, they run, they always look better. Offensively in the half court, what are you opening up for Ja Morant? How much of this movement is going to pop for other people? You know, can Kentavious Caldwell-Pope take a leap? Can Jalen Wells help out? Like, what do you have to keep pressure on teams? And so I think Ja Morant, as you said, is going to be a massive piece to this. He's going to have to get downhill and put pressure on teams and score at a consistent level and make plays and draw defenses. And with the spacing principles they've had, with the cutting they have, what does that open up? They are sneaky in the sense that we don't exactly know what all they have to a degree, but we know what they can do. So that's where I'm like, I just need to see y'all play. Mm-hmm. I need y'all to get healthy and see y'all play and see what happens. Because here's the tough part about the Western Conference, guys. You can have all the talent potential in the world. You get off to a rough start. It's an uphill climb. Mm-hmm. So they need to hit the ground running and put those on the spot where they can figure some things out.
Yeah. Like, I think to your point, this is going to be, I would imagine, another like full court pressure, just high ball pressure group defensively. In the half court, I am intrigued. especially depending on like how long Jaren's going to be out. Like if he's ready for the opener or just early in the season, then my concerns quell on that front. But just what is that part going to look like offensively? To your point about the movement, like I love that they have worked to establish that. And it's even more important while John and Jaren are out. These are our principles. This is how we want to space. This is how we want to respace. This is the pace that we want to play with. Like I have loved during preseason play. It feels like almost all of the primary action is starting with some sort of off-ball screen. We want to make sure if this is going to eventually be like a pick and roll for Jalen Wells, or if this is going to be a touch for KCP, he's coming off of a pin down first, or he's starting from the baseline and lifting up. We're getting into something first so these guys can catch the ball on the move. And then from there, we can try to create advantages. And so the fact that you have those principles being further established, in addition to, like, it's preseason, but KCP's actually making shots. Like, that's a sigh of relief based on what the Orlando season was. I don't know what happened on that front, but we know he's a good shooter. He's back to knocking down shots, so hopefully that carries over into the regular season. They can trust, all right, Jalen, it's someone that you wrote about, Steve. I will plug it for you. Wrote about Jalen Wells, not just the defense, but looking more comfortable on the ball. If you're just saying on any given possession, Jalen Wells can run something for us. We can get KCP off a pin down, 1-2 dribble pull up if he needs it. That's fine. Santi Aldama can initiate offense for us and can be moved around and used in a variety of ways. We just have anyone, if we get a defensive rebound, we can hit ahead to just about anyone and generate something smart. And then we have these basic principles of movement in the half court. That gives you something to work with while your stars either return or just get back into their regular rhythm. And so to your point about the starts, like, wouldn't surprise me at all if we're looking at like 6-4 for the Memphis Grizzlies within their first 10 while they're getting Ja back and getting Jaren back. And then to your overall point, if those two guys hit and or take leaps, now this is just very good regular season team with a bunch of young dudes that they can line shift with their lineup versatility. And it's like, oh, snap. We're dealing with Jalen Wells defense. He goes to the bench. Here's Vince Williams. You know, it just they have lots of guys that can pop in this context.
I never thought I would hear Nekias Duncan so optimistic about the Memphis Grizzlies. I don't know what to do with this. I think to your point about having different people to initiate, I think that's going to be part of finding that tempo in the half court to where Ty Jerome can bring it up, Scottie Pippen Jr., Kentavious Caldwell-Pope, Jalen Wells, Ja Morant, obviously. So we can get people involved. We can get through one action, get to the next one, get some random cuts, get some spacing, get to another pick and roll. If they're able to hit those notes with some defense, I think you got a really interesting team. And so I think it's going to be up to them to be able to hit the right notes, fly around, and execute offensively. But they're going to run off spite. And you never want to doubt a Memphis Grizzlies team that runs off spite.
Yeah, that is very true. As we flow into biggest questions for the Memphis Grizzlies, we've already talked a lot about which versions of Ja and Jaren we're going to get, so I won't hang there too long. I think the one thing that I'll hit on is just what is their ideal defense while Jaren in particular is out. And I guess related to that, Brandon Clark, we'll see when he returns, because him plus Jaren, the Grizzlies just win by a lot when those two have been on the floor over the last like 3-4 years. So for me, I think the full court pressure is going to be kind of baked in. So it's more so like the half court defense. How much help do y'all want to show and do you want to show it early with the bigs, Jock Landale in particular, because we have seen him in a deeper drop. We've also seen him up the touch and kind of sliding back. And he's been mostly okay, but he's obviously not Jaren Jackson Jr. So for me, it's just like, okay, do you want to just be like a shell based, like, let's just play drop. Let's keep things in front. Let's limit 3-point attempts. And then let's try to get out and run. How much switching do they mix in with this personnel while they don't have everyone? I just want to see, like, functionally, what is their base while Jaren is out? And can they, to your point, hit a good enough level?
Okay. I mean, to add to that, I think you need to have a version of scheme versatility. So it's not just Jaren. He's the only person who could do all these things. Right. So I think it'll be interesting to see who they pick and choose to do different things against. But I think the biggest thing for them is, can you keep the ball in front? Can you contain dribble penetration so you're not in positions where you have to overhelp and now you're putting yourself in rotation in a different way? That's the key to their defense for me. If they're going to struggle to keep the ball in front and it results in fouls or we have to help from the wing, stunt, and now we got a kick and we're flying around, that's fine. You have to survive that sometimes, but that can't be a part of your base. So can they hold up defensively, keep the ball in front, fight, contain, contest, and get a rebound and run? If they can do the job defensively, and we've seen Memphis have success on it, and that's when they played probably their best basketball. when they struggle on that end, that's where it gets tricky, because now it puts all the weight on that half-court offense. You're facing a set defense. You got to figure things out. So I'm keeping an eye on the defensive end. The pressure's going to be fine, but the pressure doesn't mean much if you can't keep the ball in front. So you want to do full court pressure. That's cool. Is that a blow by? Oh my, where are we doing?
Yeah, I think we saw a little bit, and we were joking about this the other day, that Grizzlies Hawks game. And you mentioned, hey, here's Jalen Johnson as the initiator. Cool, full court pressure. Here's a high screen. Oh no, it is Jalen Johnson getting downhill, low cross, shoulder bump, shot at rim or lob or kick out to corner. It's just like, oh, it's cool. How much time on the clock are you actually bleeding off with this full court pressure if teams can just do that? And within that, Steve, as we flow into breakout candidates or X factors, for me, while we are waiting on official word for Ja Morant and Jaren Jackson Jr. to make their returns, talked about Jock Landale and how he factors into the defense, like offensively, still screening all over the place, sprinkling in some threes. So that's been cool. But we'll see how much of that carries over into the regular season. I think the screening will, the shooting, we'll see. Ty Jerome. Heck of a season in Cleveland. Enjoyed the passing. Enjoyed the floaters. Knocked down threes. We got to the playoffs. He couldn't make shots, and the defense was what it was. Within the broader context of like some of this full court pressure and just how they hold up defensively, I would anticipate that Ty Jerome is going to be put in action. Is he ready to hold up on that end? Especially while they don't have Jaren yet. What does that part look like? If he does hold up defensively, like, I think the shot making is just not going to be what it was during most of that postseason last year. Like, I think that was not his best performance, but I don't think that's him. I trust that to bounce back. You seem more skeptical with your face, but like, I think that's going to be better for Ty Jerome. So I worry less about the offense. I think he is going to help with the pick and roll play, with the reads that he can make. Dude, they running like split action for him. And he can just catch the ball around the elbow area stuff. He can hit cutters. Like, we saw that in Cleveland. So, like, I think he's going to help grease the wheels of their half-court offense. That brother has to hold up on defense. And so, be a stabilizing force while Ja's out. And then from there, like, how often do we see him plus Ja in the same lineup together? Like, how does he spearhead the second unit? I'd imagine that'd be, like, more of a faster-paced one, which sounds funny on the team with Ja Morant on it. But, like, Ty Jerome looms a little large for me within this context for Memphis.
Okay. It's Jalen Wells for me.
Okay. I like it.
I think the better he is, the more he unlocks for Memphis, the more lineups you can play. He can play on ball. He can play off ball. And he can defend multiple positions. They're going to need his defense. So if you're telling me Jalen Wells, shots consistent, defense is there every single night against multiple positions, can be used in different ways and can have an impact on the ball. Doesn't necessarily mean he has to make every play. Doesn't mean he has to get down every time, but can make the right reads, make the right cuts. There's a lot of people you can play around him, especially when John and Jaren Jackson Jr. are healthy. So if you can bake him in at a certain level, and I think the Grizzlies want him to be something for them, I think that's huge. I think they're going to be better off for that. So that's the guy I'm looking at in Memphis to take a step for them.
I like it. And it already looks like he feels, you know, talked about it a little bit earlier, but just seems more comfortable on the ball. No, he can shoot. He's going to defend his tail off. So I am also excited for him. Just really all the young wings. Like, what does Scottie Pippen Jr. look like now with more tape on him and stuff? Like, is he able to sustain? Like, how much Vince Williams do we see? I think the defense, he's going to pressure the ball. Offensively, I don't know how much teams are going to guard. Like, I just have a lot of intrigue with this Memphis roster. We'll put it that way. Steve, what do you think the Grizzlies' best lineup is going to be this season?
Give me Ja Morant, Ty Jerome.
Okay.
Give me Jalen Wells. Give me Jaren Jackson Jr. and give me Santi Aldama.
Oh. Santi Aldama shot from Steve. We like it. I think for me. Oh, good.
Well, I was going to get my secondary one, but I'll go next.
Oh, go ahead. You know, I got like eight.
It was gonna be Ja Morant, Ty Jerome, Jalen Wells, Kentavious Caldwell-Pope, Jaren Jackson Jr. Ooh. Let's have some fun.
Okay. I think best lineup for me, whenever everyone gets healthy, Ja Morant, Jalen Wells, Kentavious Caldwell-Pope, Brandon Clark, Jaren Jackson Jr. You put Ja, Brandon Clark, Jaren Jackson Jr. on the floor, like, you just, they're just plus 10. It just has been from multiple seasons on end. So those three, and then you add the shooting and the defense of Jalen and KCP, that just feels good to me. So I think that's where the best lineup is going to be. The lineup that I want to see, not dissimilar, if not the same lineup that you mentioned a little bit earlier. Ja Morant, Jalen Wells, Kentavious Caldwell-Pope, Santi Aldama, and Jaren Jackson Jr. Give me Ja and all of the shooting around him. And let's have some fun. Don't ask me what happens if teams just switch against all of that, but that is the lineup that I most want to see from the Memphis Grizzlies this season. So we're going to take a quick break from here, but once we return, Steve, we have to talk about the Dallas Mavericks. We got to talk about the San Antonio Spurs. We got to talk about the New Orleans Pelicans. A lot of intrigue in the front court for those three teams, but we'll get to those after this break. And we are back with our Southwest Division preview. It is now time to talk about the Dallas Mavericks, Steve, coming off of a 39-43 season, which led to some lottery luck and they get Cooper Flagg. But 18th in offense, 20th in defense, 19th in net rating last season. Naturally, the thing that I am most excited about with this Dallas Mavericks season is Cooper Flagg. Top pick of the draft, incredibly good on both ends already. He has flashed pretty brightly both in summer league and in preseason. Some of the self-creation reps, he's getting a whole lot of Jason Tatum and other player comparisons with how he gets to his baskets. But the playmaking has popped, some of the poison pick and roll has popped. Defensively, he flies around, particularly off the ball. He's just good, and I just want to see more of Cooper Flagg. What does Cooper Flagg in game 5 compared to game 25 when teams, you know, update their scouting reports, learn more tendencies and stuff? How does he counter those? Like, the Cooper Flagg experience is what I'm here for. And related to that, just the Mavericks playing defense, because they do have a lot of size on this roster and a lot of lineup combinations they can get to. I think this could be a very good group. It should be a tough group to score on. Like, I've been kind of intrigued, at least through preseason play. It's been more drop than I anticipated with their bigs, considering how much collective size. Like, I just kind of had it pigeonholed. Oh, they're just going to switch everything and then show their bodies early and good luck finding space to drive and stuff. But it's been a lot of a little more drop than I anticipated. Not bad, but just like, oh, okay, this is interesting. But the defense plus Cooper Flagg, I think, is where my excitement starts. What say you, Steve?
I mean, I think for me, size is probably the number one thing I would say. To your defense point, I think it's important for them to be able to have a level of versatility. Mm-hmm. I think switching is something they know they can always get to. Right. Mm-hmm. So you want to see it. We will see it eventually. Part of having, you know, a bunch of wings and size and bigs is being able to do that consistently. Can you play drop? Do you have the screen navigation to make that work? Can you rotate out? I think that's a question they need to answer, and they need to know that pretty quickly. And so, because I don't think they want to be a team that puts two on the ball a lot. You know, size is great, but you don't want to have to fly around and rotate a bunch. You want to contain and contest. So I think defensively, the more solid they are, the better they will be. I want to see what it looks like offensively. The big intrigue for me is, how do they flow into different actions? What is the tempo like in the half court? What are they trying to attack and get to? And so, you know, there's a lot of different guys that could be used in different ways, but what's going to be the emphasis? You know, Cooper Flagg, where's he getting his touches at? I've been intrigued by a lot of post-ups, right? Brings the ball up, goes to a post-up, cross-screen in a post-up. Klay Thompson, we know we can get him off any screen we want to in life.
And they have tried all of them so far.
So that's not a problem. But, I mean, I think if they can string different actions together and keep pressure on teams, so it's not just, hey, an Anthony Davis post-up. You know, we can get to a handoff for D'Angelo Russell. We can hit you on the second side. Anthony Davis spaced. What does that look like? Who's screening for him? Is he getting off-ball screens? How much of a feature is he getting? Are we getting him at the elbow? That's what I want to see them flow into. So I think if they are able to have better pace and tempo in the half court, it's going to be good for everyone, because you lose Kyrie, and so you can't just tap the pick and roll button. It'll be something they do. They'll use it. I'm sure they'll go empty side, but they can't lean on it in the ways that they have in the past. So you're going to have to find a way to be better offensively, and I think you have a lot of versatility, which should help, you know, including PJ Washington, Najee Marshall, a lot of guys who can get downhill. So how much driving kick can you get to? How much movement can you get to? How much pressure can you keep on teams? Because they may also end up in the switch category where, all right, that's cool. We all are tall. We're going to switch everything. That's cool. How do they function through that?
Mm-hmm. I think that's fair. Can I make a cross-league comparison?
Sure.
I'm thinking about, like, the Dallas Mavericks offense just kind of as a construct, right? Like, is this just going to be, like, a level of the, like, Alyssa Thomas Connecticut Sun?
I hope pace-wise it's not.
But it's just like big initiate. We get a board, big initiate. just about anyone can get an early duck in and draw a foul.
Yeah.
It just kind of gives me that kind of vibe. Alyssa Thomas, Jonquel Jones, Bree Jones, when she came off the bench. Like, it's just, here's size. Y'all got to deal with it. Oh, you think we have shooting concerns, whatever. Doesn't matter. We're hitting you. Now what are you going to do? Shoot that. So like that part feels like it could be fun for me, at least some of the early offense stuff. Flowing into like the biggest questions that we have, and to bounce off of your overall point, Steve, about what the offense is going to look like, I think a good bit of that naturally is going to depend on the health, the usage, the productivity of Anthony Davis. I want to see, as do you, how he's going to be moved around. This has to be a season, and I want to be careful with how I frame this. As simplistic as it sounds, this has to be a season where Anthony Davis' jumper works. It just kind of has to. If he's going to get these middle-of-the-floor touches, if it's going to be jab and jay for him, this has to be a good mid-range shooting season for him to help unlock some stuff. And considering there will be times where he is playing the four, and for Mavericks fans that are listening, it's probably going to be more minutes at the four than you like. And to be frank about it, more minutes at the four than I would like. I would just like AD to be D5. But the roster is what it is. The preference is what it is. The health concerns are what they are. So I understand the logic behind it. But if he is going to be at the four to start games or whatever the minute allotment of that alignment is going to be, I don't need Anthony Davis passing up corner threes when teams are playing 8 feet off of him. Like, he just kind of has to take those in rhythm. If this is what it's going to be, this is how he has to make it work. You know what I mean? Like, I don't want, like, Anthony Davis is taking 8 threes a game. Like, that's obviously too aggressive. But within the flow, if they're running something on one side, Anthony Davis is spaced, ball swings to him. Like, those are your opportunities because he's getting short closes anyway. He's going to have to make enough of those shots, ideally to make the defense bend, but at a bare minimum, to just complete possessions and to maintain their flow. So, like, this is going to be, you know, fortunately or unfortunately, depending on your view, it's a big Anthony Davis jumper season. It has to be a weapon for him. So I want to see what that part looks like. You know, more than I have a couple other things, but like that's number one for me, the Anthony Davis of it all.
Okay. How many of these lineups can hit to the degree that Dallas needs to hit?
Mm-hmm.
It's probably where I go. D'Angelo Russell's going to come and do his job. How many of these tall ball lineups are going to work on both ends of the floor?
Mm-hmm.
Is what I want to understand, is what I want to know. How much defense can you play consistently? Two big lineups are fantastic. That does mean your four has to defend at a certain level. So are you ready to keep the ball in front? What do your rotations look like? Are you consistent with them? Are you going to cause havoc on that end to emphasize the size that you have? And so that's kind of what I want to see and understand every single night. What is their identity going to be? What is it going to become? Are you throwing in more post-ups? Are you a defensive team? Are you grinding people in the half court? And hey, we have versatility. You never know who's going to go off. What are you every single night? That's what we need to figure out about the Dallas Mavericks to see if they're going to knock on the door of anything in the Western Conference. This is a team that has potential and talent. That's only going to get us so far. But you have to use this versatility. You got all these wings. You're going to end up being a switchable defense. You can cause havoc on that end. You got size. You should be able to attack different matchups on the other end. You got to use that to your advantage and keep pressure on teams. And so do you have that commitment every single night to get after it defensively and then also attack on the other end and get the shots you want? Are you going to end up being slow in the half court? Are you going to be a team that is trying to find it defensively? If those things happen, we got a different story.
Mm-hmm. No, I think that's fair. And I think the last thing I'd add, just in terms of question that I have, we've already talked a little bit about it, so I won't hang here too long. Just in general, the guard play, just how good will D'Angelo Russell be? How good will Klay Thompson be? When we do get into some of these like no point guard lineups like we saw, you know, last night against Utah, just, okay, cool. What is the decision making going to be? Because like the possession I laughed at the loudest from that game, early offense, Klay Thompson bringing the ball up the floor. Cooper Flagg is setting up a post-up against Keyontae George. And before he can get fully turned, Klay is taking a pull-up three. And I'm just like, hey, whoa, 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 hey, whoa, whoa, whoa.
Ooh, I got the ball.
I was like, hey, man. I don't know if that's the one. Like, I understand, to your overall point, like, the balance of what they're trying to do in the half court. It shouldn't just be the Klay Thompson package. It shouldn't just be, we got size mismatches. All we are doing is posting up, because I think that makes it a little bit easier for defenses to load up. And I don't think you get the synergy that you want. There has to be a balance. But like, that was just a very funny one to me. It was like, ooh, okay, let's not do that. We have this thing to poke at. But I think it's going to be interesting to see how that develops. But in general, if Klay in some of these lineups is going to be more initiator than off-ball threat, what does that look like? Will it be pick and roll? Will it be more handoff than pick and roll to kind of get him the ball on the move to help him turn the corner a little bit? Ideally draw an extra defender, and then some of these bigs can duck in. You get into some of the cutting and stuff. Just like, what is that usage going to look like? Again, D'Lo, what is going to be the playmaking versus pull-up jumper balance for him? How much of a factor is he going to be in making sure the Mavericks run as much as they can? You know, that's why I made the comparison, like, with the Connecticut Sun, just some of the early duck-ins that we saw from their bigs that year. Like, D'Lo's a really good passer. D'Lo's a good entry passer. D'Lo's a good hit-ahead passer. Like, he can help juice things on that front. So, like, going to need him. Does Ryan Nembhard pop in any capacity? Summer league slash preseason has been interesting for us. Like, so what does that look like? So that'd be the other thing that I would add on the question front.
I think for me, this is where it gets interesting with the Cooper Flagg of it all, because he can do a lot of things. And I think what we've seen in the preseason, he can do it within a different context. It doesn't feel like it has to be, we have to give him the ball. He has to do X, Y, and Z. He can get it in the flow. You know, he can grab and go. You can throw it ahead to him. He can make plays in transition. And so I think the more that he grows, the more you get comfortable with having these different lineups. And so I just think it's going to be the mindset that they have. You know what I mean? Guys are going to have to get downhill. Guys are going to have to cut hard. You're going to have to really focus in on executing every single night to force defenses to defend you in a different way.
Mm-hmm. I like it. I like it. So, Steve, I'll bounce it to you. Who is your breakout candidate or X factor for this Mavs group?
My X factor is PJ Washington slash Najee Marshall.
I like it.
Now, we're going to see what the starting lineup's going to be. We know it's probably going to have two bigs. We know Cooper Flagg's going to be there. Klay, insert person here. Those two have got to be chaos agents. If they both come off the bench, if one starts, whatever it is, right? They've got to be pressure points to where their defense has an impact and they are impacting offensively. Knock down quality shots, drive closeouts, keep an advantage if Dallas gets one. The better those two are, the better the Dallas Mavericks are, in my opinion. Because now you're looking at lineup versatility in a different way. So, you know, we know they have all the bigs. We know AD wants to play the four. Eventually, they're going to have some moments where they have one big out there. If you are able to have one big and dynamic wings and size, I think that opens a lot up. So the better those two play on both ends of the floor, the more that we can see Dallas try to do.
I love that. And I have a question for you. What's because up? I do think heading into the year, I think Najee and PJ are going to be coming off the bench. Like, I think they are going to go with, like, D'Lo, Klay, Cooper, AD, and Derek Lively to start, right? Within that starting group, because I think when PJ's on the floor, the answer is just him. Who do you want defending top options among that starting lineup? Are you just giving Cooper that? Are you tasking Klay to do that?
Probably PJ. Start.
I'm saying, like, if he's not starting, I don't anticipate, like, among the starting.
Oh, yeah, with the starting lineup. Yeah. Sorry.
I should have tossed that in the biggest question category. But, like, yeah, that's why I was like, Like, do you just give Cooper that responsibility from day one?
I don't mind it. I think here's the thing. They're probably going to be more switchable off ball than on ball.
Mm-hmm.
And so I know you dislike my default answer, but, like, they're going to switch. So if I had to pick someone, Dallas Mavericks Twitter is going to yell at me. Klay Thompson.
Okay.
Yeah, I said it.
Yeah. Okay.
Let the Rook be the Rook. Let him be switchable off ball. Let him be active. Put it on Klay's shoulder. Ride it to glory.
Okay. Okay. Figure that ass. And then just quickly for me, like, I already talked about it, so I won't hang here. It's just the guard room for me. Those are my X factors. D'Lo, how good are you going to be? And breakout candidate, again, if Ryan Nembhard coming off of a strong summer, if he is actually just a good rotation piece early, that helps unlock some stuff. Lineup versatility-wise, and even just looking at, like, roster balancing decisions moving forward, like, if you just hit on, like, second-round guy, like, that just helps them moving forward. So we'll go there.
Mm-hmm. You tapping the button a lot on this Ryan Nembhard, man. We're going to talk about it.
I just, hey, listen, I'm if I got to take a nail, I will. That's fine. But.
All right. I'm typing out a second one.
All right. Steve, what do you think the Mavericks' best lineup is going to be?
Give me tall ball. Okay. Tall ball. Give me the tall ball. Give me Derek Lively. Give me Anthony Davis. Give me Cooper Flagg. Give me Klay Thompson. Give me insert wing here. PJ Washington. That's what I want. Give me size.
Okay. Best lineup, I think, is going to be D'Angelo Russell, Klay Thompson, Cooper Flagg, PJ Washington, Anthony Davis. What's the lineup you most want to see? Is it just the tall ball group?
No.
Oh.
It sure isn't, brother.
Okay.
It kind of is, but it's kind of not.
That's tremendous content.
They're just a big team, but here's what I want to see, right?
Mm-hmm.
Give me Cooper Flagg. Give me Najee Marshall. Give me PJ Washington. Give me Derek Lively.
Big Gaff?
Give me Daniel Gafford.
And this is the I Hate Anthony Davis lineup. Folks, we've done it. We got Steve. I was like, he's either about to slander Anthony Davis or he's about to find a way to get Klay Thompson in here when he was trying not to get Klay Thompson in here. And by golly, he somehow did both. Tremendous content. Lineup I most want to see. Klay Thompson, Max Christie, which I also feel like this could be a pretty big year for him if he knocks down shots. Cooper Flagg, PJ Washington, and Anthony Davis. Ultimately, I just want Cooper, PJ, AD, 3-5. Like, that's just kind of the construct that I want to see.
You really tapping this single big lineup for a team that's not going to do it?
Look, they probably won't do it as much as I would like. I do think that's going to be the best version of the team with AD at the 5. And so that's where, like, this is what I want to see because I think this is going to be how you optimize things. And from there, like, again, Russell and Klay, Klay Christie. If you want to throw, like, the Najee Marshall bit is a good shout. You already mentioned him as an X factor, but also someone that can navigate some ball handling duties. Like, I think you have lots of configurations, but yeah, I want Cooper, PJ, and AD, man. They're just good and versatile, and this is what they can do. So,
Nah, man. Let's get bigger. Daniel Gafford, Anthony Davis, Derek Lively, Cooper Flagg, PJ Washington.
Good gracious. What have we done? Thank goodness none of them are 7-4. It'll just be the 2K26 lineup. All right. We now move, while we're in Texas, I suppose. We move to the San Antonio Spurs, Steve. Coming off of a 34-48 season, 19th in offense, 25th in defense, 22nd in net rating. Naturally, a lot of injuries and absences towards the second half of the year. Wimby didn't finish the season. De'Aaron Fox was acquired and didn't finish the season. So, you know, grain of salt with those regular season numbers overall. But I am most excited, as a shocker, about Victor Wembanyama. Because what on earth is this about to be, Steve? He is, first and foremost, fully healthy. And thank goodness he was able to get past his health scare. Beyond that, a wild offseason for him, where he did a little bit of everything, but has also come back noticeably stronger. We know how terrifying he could be defensively. Offensively, the catch radius for lobs and stuff for him is just absurd. He can self-create. He can pass. He can do a little bit of everything. The preseason thing for me, and I was talking to you about this yesterday, was like watching him set up post position, I have so much less stress and angst about it now. He's not quite at, like, I have a defender on my hip. I am not driving you underneath the basket. It's more, I am standing here and you're not pushing me off my spot anymore. If I'm standing 9 feet from the basket, my hand is up, I will still be 9 feet from the basket when I receive the ball. And then from there, he's a dribble away from a finger roll or a dunk or like a fading jumper going across the basket. And it just, you can't do anything about it. You can't contest the shot. And so like that, plus the playmaking, plus the defense, plus whatever the shooting is going to be. And he just has not taken a lot of threes so far in preseason. We'll see how that's going to ramp up in the regular season. Just Wimby. Like, is this the year that he plays 65 plus games and just wrecks stuff?
Well, let's stick with Wimby. Okay. So I think this is interesting. I'm glad you mentioned this. And we've seen kind of a shift from Victor Wembanyama. You have been a captain of the, hey, is this a good shot? And I have tried to raise my hand and say, hey, well, you know, he's very tall, so it's not like he can really see people. And you've been like, yeah, that's cool. Is this a good shot?
Very process-filled, yeah.
I've liked the process of what Victor Wembanyama has tried to establish. He averaged, what, almost 9 threes a game last year? He's taken a total of 9 threes in the preseason over 4 games. So it's a moment where it's an understanding and an emphasis of, I need to get in the paint more, and I'm looking to do so in different ways. And I think with Victor Wembanyama, there's such a sandbox approach because he can do a lot of different things. You can put him in different actions. You can unlock him in different ways and keep pressure on defenses, but it also doesn't feel like there's one thing they're going to emphasize. So his mindset to, I need to get touches where I need them, helps kind of emphasize and give a little bit of structure to the versatility the Spurs have. And so you've seen that in the preseason. Shot fake from three, drive. I'm trying to get in the paint. If I get a switch on a matchup and you're smaller than me, I'm trying to get a post up and a post touch. I'm trying to get a catch at the elbow. I'm trying to get somewhere where I'm close to the paint, and now I make a move, and you either got to react or I get what I want. Now, his strength is going to be tested, and we've seen that in the preseason, because teams are still going to be like, hey, man, you're very tall. Our best option is to hit you. And when you put the ball on the floor, we will hit you again. Mm-hmm. And so do those post-ups become on the block, or are these, you know, mid-range catches?
Yeah.
On the face-up, is he hitting first? That's great. Is the defense moving? Is he now going this way and ending up at the free throw line? Or is he going into the paint? When he drives, is he going to be liable to handle defenses trying to dig and take things away? And so there's going to be an element of development there, but he's got the right mindset. And I think that helps San Antonio because they're unlocking different stuff. Inverted pick and roll for Victor. He brings it up, guard coming to screen. Elbow catch, guard coming to screen. Luke Kornet with him, Luke Kornet coming to screen.
Mm-hmm.
So there's different things that they're kind of trying to get him downhill on and seeing if that opens up. And he's been a willing passer. Maybe a little too willing at times in the preseason.
Like, bro, shoot the ball.
not the wrong mindset, but I get the idea, but I don't know if you could do that. But the better he kind of gets that part of it, I think that unlocks a lot for San Antonio. So I think the Wimby of it all is very interesting. But, I mean, defensively, hey, his drop where he's dropped back and then he just swipes at the ball.
Mm-hmm.
And then he has the ball, or the ball handler's like, hey, what was that? What do you do? That part is still what it is.
Yeah, the concept of Victor Wembanyama technically playing, like he can play in a deep drop and still affect the ball handler, is not how that's supposed to work. But he just can't because his arms are so freaking long. It's kind of nuts. But also in the excited bucket, potential bounce back year for Devin Vassell, who wasn't bad last year, but didn't hit the same high notes as he did a year ago. And then Stephon Castle's coming off of winning Rookie of the Year. And I'm cool. I'm ready to see more of the driving craft and some of the foul drawing and some of the defense. They're certainly going to need that to take some pressure off of Wimby, for that matter. But I'll always hear for more Stephon Castle. We got to see where the jumper's going to be this year. But I am excited to see him plus Devin Vassell.
I don't want to jump ahead too quick, but I also want to say the guard room, the intrigue of Stephon Castle, Dylan Harper, and oh yeah, they also have De'Aaron Fox. Don't forget about that. And mm-hmm. Don't do the thing, hey, I'm looking at you, don't do the thing where you are going to automatically trade De'Aaron Fox because Stephon Castle and Dylan Harper are good. De'Aaron Fox is a very good basketball player. And so we need to see what that looks like in the real Spurs context, as opposed to when he got there halfway, wasn't all the way healthy, and teams were like, you know what? We don't really want to deal with this. Switch. Whatever, man. Figure out what you want to do, but we're going to switch this and y'all figure it out. So look at the kind of creation that they can have from them, those guys, as far as being able to get downhill, forcing help, making different plays, playing off each other. Like, I think that's one of the things I liked about Stephon Castle in the preseason is, hey, poise and composure and changing speeds. I have a better understanding of how to get downhill in a way that's going to bother you, and I can go slow, quick, decelerate, and now I'm finishing. I can go drive kick, relocate, and wait for a kick to come back to me, and I'm comfortable with that shot. Those type of plays are what gets me excited about Stephon Castle.
I like it. Let's flow into the biggest question, Steve. one, there is the De'Aaron Fox of it all, and we can have like a more holistic conversation here if you'd like.
Oh my, here it is.
not even that, because I guess we can hang with De'Aaron Fox first. Because for me, obviously a very talented basketball player, and as we both alluded to at this point, he was not fully healthy last year. Like, I am excited to see De'Aaron Fox with like fully functioning hands that feels important for playing basketball. That should be cool. That should help some of the shooting, right? But I think, to your point, we talked about this, you know, after the Fox trade happened and stuff. The beauty of having De'Aaron Fox and Victor Wembanyama together is that like, both of them can be used in a multitude of ways. And so, like, them building out their chemistry and just becoming an all NBA caliber tandem together, like, that obviously raises the floor and the ceiling of this group. And so, just now that both are entering the season healthy, they've had, ideally, at least most of training camp still, because De'Aaron Fox has still been out. But ideally, you get to see more of the chemistry building. You get to see just how those two operate off of each other. And within the broader context of the Spurs, because you do have Castle, you did just draft Dylan Harper, you can get some answers. It's like, okay, do we think this is something that we want to lean into long term? They gave De'Aaron Fox the contract extension, and I dubbed that immediately as an understandable gamble. Tweets are out there. And I was like, okay, so now we get to see. Does this work? If so, bet. We got an all-NBA caliber point guard. We have Wemby. We also have these young dudes in the wing that we can all grow together. Or if you want to make a swing for a third star, we have young dudes in the room that we can trade. Because the beauty of the De'Aaron Fox trade for the Spurs was we got this dude in the building. We didn't have to give up Stephon Castle. We didn't have to give up the pick that became Dylan Harper. We didn't have to give up Devin Vassell. Like, we just have stuff, right? This is the benefit of that kind of trade and that kind of asset management. We can make another move now if we want to and still have talent in the room. So, like, the De'Aaron Fox of it all is going to be important. And at his best, can get to the paint when he wants. Could knock down enough pull-up jumpers to where you're just annoyed by him because you can't play all the way off. And defensively, you know, shout out friend of the program, Mark Jones. He's talked about, like, when De'Aaron Fox locks in defensively, there aren't many guards better because of the speed, the quickness of the hands, the way they can read off ball. Like, the thing for Fox has mostly been, okay, how often, how consistently are you locking into this level? Because the peak level is incredibly high. Like, it kind of reminds me of, like, I guess another Kentucky example. It kind of reminds me of John Wall, to where when that dude was in, oh my goodness. Fast, big, quick hands, good off-ball awareness. This is not fun. And then he's driving at me on the other end. And when he isn't locked in, it was also John Wall. Hey, man, you too athletic to... What is this? Why are you getting blown by? What are these reach arounds when dudes are getting past you? Why are you getting back cut? What is this? This is a context where De'Aaron Fox is not expected to be the best player on the team. Not even close. He should have the room to lock in more defensively, and we get that version more consistently. So which version of Fox we get and how that affects team building moving forward, I think looms pretty large with this Spurs group.
Interesting. I'm not surprised, but I like surprised. It. So, I mean, De'Aaron Fox was brought here for a reason, and I think it kind of ties into some of my questions. I won't belabor too much on the Fox. We do good stuff. How do they handle if they find success? What do they do in the half court consistently well that I have to come in the morning and talk about in a coach's meeting? Mm-hmm. Can they hit the right things in the half court offensively every single night? I think the drives are interesting. I think transition's interesting. I think they got a lot of talent. Victor Wembanyama is very good. De'Aaron Fox is very good. But how does that mesh together? Are you running elbow action? Does it take 8 seconds to get into it? If your guards play at a higher level, now they get trapped or they put two on the ball. Are they ready for that? What does that look like? Or are you depending on defense stops and transition? Can you kind of build a base? I think Victor Wembanyama is very much spoken, hey, we have to get stops. It's non-negotiable. We got to play on that end. Cool. What happens when teams space him and drive at everyone else? And he helps, and now it's a kick. Are you prepared for that? Are you ready for teams to kind of attack you in different ways? Offensively, I just want to know what their thing is, opposed to they have really good people and can do different stuff. That's kind of my biggest question right now.
No, I think that is more than fair. And I think kind of related to that, as you mentioned, the Wemby defense piece in particular, what is this team going to look like when Wemby is not on the court? And more specifically, what is the defense going to look like structurally when Wemby is not on the court? Because with all due respect to Luke Kornet, who I liked the signing at the time, but I said so on the pod. Going from Wimby to Luke Kornet is a little bit different for opposing offenses, I would say, in terms of their comfort and things. And just historically in the Wimby era, the defense in particular is what dies when he goes off the court. So over his first 2 years, it's a minus 0.5 net rating with him on, just pretty much neutral, speaks to how good he is. A minus 8 with him off, which that's a pretty big gap. And the defense is just so much worse when Wimby hasn't been on the floor, which, all again, speaks to his greatness, but also, what are the other options? What are you doing structurally, et cetera? And so I need to see what that looks like. Is Kornet in the drop in the jumpy jump? Is that going to be enough to kind of stabilize things more than we've seen in years past? We will see. If we get like some... Steve did not like that. But in all seriousness, like, as we talked about the De'Aaron Fox defense and things like that, just in general, is the offense better enough to where they can set their half-court defense more and that gives them more wiggle room? It's something that you talk about pretty often with this group. And so, like, is that their way of being able to survive without them on the floor? So that's also kind of top of mind for me. And the bigger picture question that I had before we got to the De'Aaron Fox of it is just how much shooting, do they have enough shooting on the roster to make this work? It's more of a guard room question than anything, but Harrison Barnes shouldn't be this important. You know what I mean? Like, you kind of need more shooting, I think. And so if any of those young guards pop or Fox is back to knocking out catch and shoots at a reasonable level, that helps. We obviously see where Wimby lands, but shooting questions heading in for me with this group. There's one guy I don't have a question about, and we'll talk about him shortly, but yeah. Who is your breakout or X factor for this group, Steve?
I mean, I think the biggest thing, the X factor for me feels Devin Vassell adjacent, but I'm going to stick with Stephon Castle.
Okay.
And he's probably graduated past X factor, but I just feel like if he gets even better, that really is just something they can lock in. And so I think some of the things I've been encouraged by is compete level on defense in the preseason. It's where I'm going to switch again. Keep the ball in front. But his ability to get downhill, you know, his ability to off ball, stampede, drive, get in the paint, kick, the consistency that he's shown as far as pick and roll, enjoying the space and changing speeds, the better he is. I just don't know. Like, that just unlocks a lot for me. And if he's able to kind of see the floor better, make the right passes, they can knock down shots. It's Stephon Castle. I think he can elevate them.
I like it. I went away from the guard room for this since I knew I was going to talk about him a good bit early on. And so I have two names down, Steve.
Okay.
One name is Keldon Johnson. The drives are going to be important. We'll see where he lands as a catch and shoot threat. And the defense just has to be better, at the very least more consistent from what we've seen so far in his career. I think he has the athletic tools, the off-ball awareness got to get better, et cetera. The second name that I have written down, Steve, is Mitch Johnson. This is the first full season where we know for sure you are the guy. You are the voice. You put this stuff together. And so that not even a negative thing. It's just like, oh, this is just yours now. There is no confusion about you are running a continuation of what Pop already had in place, and then you made tweaks as the season went on, et cetera. This is just fully yours now. You are extended. You're locked in. The torch has been passed to you. We're going to learn, I think, a good bit about, like, what are your philosophies? What adjustments do you like to make? What is just the timeline for when you want to make tweaks? Like, how much wiggle room are you giving your original plans before making changes and things? Like, I'm excited to learn more about the Mitch Johnson experience in general. If he proves to just be very good, then some of the lineup questions, some of the what does the defense look like structurally questions, et cetera, like, those are going to be answered and answered pretty quickly for me. And so, like, I'm just excited to see what this is going to look like. I'm really intrigued by this. I don't know if that counts as a traditional, like, breakout candidate or X factor, but, like, I feel like we should talk about Mitch a little bit. I'd make sure I said his name on the pod. It's like, okay, this is one of one.
Yeah, man, go ahead.
All right, fair enough. Steve, what do you think the Spurs' best lineup is going to be this year?
Spurs' best lineup? I mean, let's go with... I was going to put Jeremy Sochan in here to bother you. Infinitely, but I'm gonna go outside the box.
Okay.
This is what I think their best lineup will be. This is the lineup I want to see. Give me De'Aaron Fox, Dylan Harper, Stephon Castle, Devin Vassell, Victor Wembanyama.
Ooh, four guards and Wimby. I like it. I would also, it wasn't the lineup I most wanted to see, but that is a lineup that I want to see. So I think that's a good shout. We'll see how often that button gets pressed. So since those were both of yours, I'll get mine out of the way quickly so we can get to the Pelicans. Best lineup for me, De'Aaron Fox, Devin Vassell, Harrison Barnes, Julian Champagne, Victor Wembanyama. The lineup I most want to see, it'll technically be like point Wemby in this case, but either way, Devin Vassell, Harrison Barnes, Julian Champagne, Keldon Johnson, Victor Wembanyama. So you went four guards. I'm basically going four wings slash forwards around Wemby, get a little bit more size. But that's the group that I want to see. And with that, Steve, it is now time to close with the New Orleans Pelicans, who also dealt with some roster turnover and some injuries, but coming off of a 21-61 season, 25th in offense, 29th in defense, 29th in net rating last year. And my excitement level starts with their two best players. Zion Williamson is back and looks to be in tremendous shape. And I think more than that, at least listening to like the media day and just any of the interviews he's done, he just seems to be in a better place mentally. Like he seems good. It just feels like this is a better feeling version of Zion Williamson. So naturally, I'm excited to see what that looks like. And as we've seen in preseason play so far, can still get to the rim when he wants, can still make a variety of passes when defenses show attention to his way. He's competing more defensively, but I'm sure we're going to talk a little bit more about that during this section. But if the Pelicans get all NBA version of Zion and they actually get him for 65 plus games, the floor of this group is a lot higher than people anticipate, I believe. And then naturally, Trey Murphy III, we know he can shoot the leather off the ball, but he seems stronger. The handle seems a little bit better. People are bouncing off of him. He's using the shoulders to create more space inside the arc. That part excites me quite a bit. And finally, the return of Herb Jones soon. I think it's time for people to remember how good Herb Jones is. So that's where my excitement level starts, Steve. What are you excited about with this Pelicans group?
I feel like that's also where your excitement level stops. So
you took
Zion and Trey Murphy and Herb Jones off the table. So I will quickly say Trey Murphy is here. And if you are not aware, he's looking to get better and has gotten better. So the more that he can operate in space and hit you first and get downhill, the better off he can be used. I think for me with the Pelicans, it's just they have a lot of talent. That if you look at it, they have a lot of guys who can do different things. I think Jordan Poole will have an impact for them. And I think the interesting part is adding Kevon Looney and immediately going to Warriors post splits was very funny to see as far as Kevon Looney throwing it into the post and then setting a split. And then Kevon Looney also being in the post and them splitting. But Jordan Poole being able to get downhill. Trey Murphy is going to look to get downhill. Zion Williamson is going to look to get downhill. So this is a group that's going to attack you. So if they're able to kind of put that together offensively, keep pressure on that way, that'll be interesting. The defense is probably bleed into my question, but you're going to have to compete on that end at a higher level. And so one of the things with Zion, it's been interesting to see, looks better, more athletic. How does that affect his defense? Because he's more active, but that kind of puts him out of position on some of these switches. You know, I've always said he's kind of like a grizzly bear out there where he's just like, rah, I'm here. And that's cool. That's cool. But now you're kind of to the left a little bit. Now they drive, you're trying to recover. How do you kind of consistently rotate and recover? Are you ready to lock in on the weak side? Do you have enough two-way lineups if you're New Orleans to make this work how it could in a very tough Western Conference? I think that's the biggest thing. But, you know, look at some of their bench, like Jeremiah Fears, Sadiq Bey. Like, those are people who can play the game of basketball. And so do you have enough combinations to be able to put 48 minutes together?
I think that's fair. And like flowing into the biggest question, literally in my notes, Steve, is forget how good is the defense. How do they want to defend?
Oh, no.
Here it comes.
Weak side rotations, can't guard pick and roll.
We're not far removed from the Pelicans having a top 10 defense. Don't put that much sauce on me. Come on. But no, like this personnel is different, particularly in the starting guard room, which I will once again say, I wish a little bit more respect was put on the Jordan Poole season in Washington last year. Like, I do think the energy level, the effort level was better from him on that end. Still not a stopper, but was more active, more consistent with his effort. But he's going to certainly have to carry that over and probably take it up another notch, frankly, for this Pelicans group. But yeah, one of the things we noted on like our early preseason takeaways episode not too long ago, I was like, okay, the Pelicans, they're switching. We've seen some drop. We've seen some ice. We've seen some two on the ball. And at different points, I'm like, okay, this is interesting. I see how this can work. And then shortly after, it's like, oh no. Well, here's the coverage bust. They got to tighten this up. So I will once again say, what base do they want to land on? Because naturally, you want to be able to do different things, as you've also said on the spot. But what exactly do you want to start with? What do you think is going to be your base? How quickly can you get that sturdy? What does sturdy mean within this context? Is sturdy 12th in defensive rating? Is it 15th? Is it 17th? Like, what does that land? And then from there, how many different things can you do? Because for me, you already mentioned the Zion point, so I'm not going to hang there long. Herb Jones is incredible, but a lot of pressure is going to be on him to help stabilize their starting lineup at the very least. You mentioned Jeremiah Fears. Jose Alvarado is going to pester dudes when he comes in, but it does flow into your point about, like, what is the lineup balance going to be here for them to be able to put that kind of thing together. So that's where I'm at. Well, I think we both have defensive concerns.
I think it's just how many things can you do? You know, can you keep the ball in front? Can you switch? How many people can do it? And can you do it consistently? If they can just survive on we do this, and it's not a series of errors where we're bad at pick and roll, we're bad at weak side help, we're bad at rotating out of it, that's what they have to avoid. If they can just say, hey, this is what we are not good at, but we know it, they can live with that. But if it's a wheel of errors, that's an issue.
Not the wheel of errors. Okay. Who's your X factor for this group, Steve?
Oh, man. I mean, they have so many people who have graduated from this category, I feel like. Mm. I'm gonna go Derek Queen.
Oh, the guy that gave up quite a bit to bring into the building.
What does it look like if he's just good? What if he's just a good basketball player, get downhill, the defense holds up? Does that open something up for New Orleans? Does that make them better?
Should.
Can they play him and Zion together? Like, what does that do? That's the one. Because I could say Jordan Poole, but Jordan Poole is Jordan Poole, and Jordan Poole is going to be Jordan Poole. And he's going to have Smoothie King center rocking. Like, Trey Murphy's very good. Herb Jones is very good. I don't want to put it all on Jeremiah Fears. And I'm not going to say Jordan Hawkins. So,
not the Queen process of elimination is frying me. I know what these nine dudes are, so darn it. Oh, Lord. That's a good bit. But no, I think that's fair. Like, I honestly thought you were going to go Jordan Poole just because he may be tasked with playing more quote-unquote point guard in this context. But I like the shout, though. For me, like, I have Herb Jones listed. Because, again, one, you want him to be healthy. But two, if I have defensive questions, then, yeah, like, having one of the best wing defenders on planet Earth back in the lineup should help that. So, like, just, again, can be a stabilizing force. And on the other end, as he's gotten to initiate a little bit more, gotten to lead more fast breaks, we've seen some of the playmaking pop against tilted defenses. Like, do we see that growth continue? Where does the three-point shot land for Herb Jones? Because we've seen what it looks like when he's knocking down corner threes consistently. We've also seen teams say, all right, we're going to put our center on Herb Jones and just not guard him because he just doesn't have it tonight. And it's like, oh, no, I don't want that for you, Herb. So that's going to be important. I guess the other guy I mentioned, as you went with Derek Queen, Eves Missy is another guy that had in the notes. Kevon Looney got the preseason starts. But Eves Missy coming off of an interesting rookie campaign. Want to see the defense stabilize. I think the tools are there. Some of the rim protection is there. Some of the stuff in space gets a little dicey for him. Monster on the offensive glass. Like, what steps does he take? And if he does take a step up, that should help stabilize the center room and, frankly, take a little pressure off of Derrick Queen as he recovers from injury. You don't have to rush him into the lineup to prove that you made the right choice if you're getting stable play from Kevon Looney and good stuff from Eves Missy. So those would be the two guys that I mentioned on that front, Steve. What do you think will be New Orleans' best lineup?
I'm going to give you a dual one again.
Okay.
We respect Kevon Looney in this household, by the way. Okay. But give me Zion Williamson. Give me Herb Jones. Give me Trey Murphy III. Give me Jordan Poole. And give me Sadiq.
Sadiq,
baby. Sadiq, baby.
There it is. I think the best lineup for me, Jose Alvarado. Trey Murphy III, Herb Jones. I also have Sadiq Bey. It's very funny. And Zion Williamson at the five. So you give Zion some space. You still have the point of attack stuff with Jose. You also have Herb Jones out there. You get the shooting from Trey and Bey, which there we go. But there you go. So I think that's going to be the best group. The lineup I most want to see, also a smaller one, Jose Alvarado, Jordan Poole, Trey Murphy III, Herb Jones, Zion Williamson. I think they have some interesting small lineups to toss out there. Like, obviously, we're going to have to keep an eye on the rebounding with those smaller groups. But they're going to blitz teams offensively, I feel like, whenever they go Zion at the five. So, and that concludes our Southwest Division preview, Steve. We've done it. We got a couple more to go, but we're through with the Southwest. And from there, we're going to take a quick break, and we're going to close with the W section. We have to salute the champions and, frankly, the team that they beat to become champions. We'll be right back. And we are back, Steve, and we have a new champion on the W side. Last episode, the Aces were up 3-0. It was like, hey, what is this going to look like? What adjustments do we see? Just 4-0. The Aces got it done. Asia Wilson, 31-9-4, five stops in the game. She took 19 free throws in the game because it very interestingly officiated game with techs and ejections and a lot of good stuff. But the Aces, wire-to-wire victory over the Phoenix Mercury. Three championships in 4 years. This is a team that you had to talk me off the ledge on with how they were looking midway through the year. They were under 500. The defense wasn't where it needed to be. Becky, every other post game was talking about the defense. The offense uneven. They get beat by 53 by the Minnesota Lynx, and then they win 16 in a row to close out the regular season. Win game one to bring it up to 17-0, but they end up going the distance against Seattle. They go the distance against the Indiana Fever, missing a bunch of players. It ends a sweep against the Phoenix Mercury just to cap off a season that makes all of the sense in the world. But great resilience, a great run from Asia Wilson in particular, who was also your finals MVP in this one. Just Steve, your general thoughts on this Aces series and their season.
You give them a sniff of the title and they sprinted towards it. Mm. And that's all I needed. And it's just a salute to the Las Vegas Aces. That's all I want to do. Winning is hard. Winning is difficult. Adversity is going to come for you. And it's all about how you overcome it and what you do with those steps. And the Aces had to go through it in a lot of different ways. They had to find themselves on both ends of the floor, but they did. They were able to understand what they lacked, what they were struggling with, knew what their strengths were, and they worked towards it. And that's the hardest part. That's the thing we don't see a lot of. We talk about these teams as failures or frauds or whatever word you want to use, and you forget they are working towards something. They are trying to get to this. They see it. The Aces saw what they could be. Mm-hmm. They also knew they weren't doing it, and it looked like they were going to be in a position where it doesn't matter if you get there, you're going to be in a tough spot, and they worked themselves into a position to win a championship, and I just salute them for the efforts they gave because I know that had to be a hard season, mm-hmm. but you saw the belief come. And every single person contributed to that championship. Yeah. That's the biggest thing for me. Becky Hammon having the trust in that roster and the belief in that roster and pushing them in that direction was huge. Asia Wilson is Asia Wilson, and I need to say no more words on top of that. You know exactly what I mean. But you saw Jewel Lloyd understand the assignment and try her tail off on defense and make shots. You saw Dana Evans make shots to compete, championship winner. We know what Chelsea Gray does. Megan Gustafson stepped in when they needed to. Nalissa Smith, doesn't matter if you traded a first-round pick, I'm here. Thank you for saving my life, I'm here. Like, this was a team from top to Kirsten Bell. Give me my 7 minutes, I'm going to rock with it. This is a team that knew what they had to do, and they got it done. Mm. And so I just wanted to salute them.
No, I think that's fair. Jackie Young, obviously huge in this series as well on both ends. It's just wild to see them work through these issues. You get the Nalissa Smith trade. You get Jewel Lloyd going to the bench midway through the year as well as they toggle the starting lineup. It's just working towards finding some kind of base defensively and being able to play out of that. Leaning more into, it's obviously going to be Asian, it's going to be Jackie, but like, how do we get them the ball? More handoffs between the two. Pick and roll still really good, but we're putting both of those players in different spots. Chelsea Gray, like, reinventing herself probably sounds too strong in this context, but her just becoming, like, one of the best fours in the league at random, in addition to the shot-making, 18 in the game four. We had been saying throughout the series, we haven't gotten the Chelsea shot-making game yet, but she's done everything else. Just kill shot after kill shot after kill shot in that game four, in addition to, yeah, I'll guard Satu Sabli, or I'll guard Big Wing here. I'll guard all these post-ups, and y'all can't do anything because my hands are quick and I'm smarter than you. It's just really cool to watch this group battle through this level of adversity. You mentioned Becky Hammon. I heard say, actually, y'all do the scout reports then. We're going to get y'all to lock in. It's just an incredible turnaround for them, an incredible season for them. So I echo your sentiments, Steve. Salute to the Las Vegas Aces. Just very quickly from me. Obviously, you don't want a season to end in a sweep. But that amount of roster turnover, and you get to the finals in year one, knocking off the two teams that were in the finals last year. Again, you don't hand clap a sweep, especially when they could have won game one, they could have won game three. There are things to critique. This was one heck of a season for the Phoenix Mercury. And like, I just don't want that to be lost. It is really difficult to have that kind of year, that kind of run in year one of a build. And they did it.
So correct.
I just wanted to put that on wax there. So.
Speaking of doing it, give us a quick outro and hit the horns.
Fair enough. Well, thank you for listening to this episode of the Dunker Spot. If you haven't already, please subscribe. We're on Apple, Spotify, RIP Google, Stitcher, Podbean, wherever you get your podcast, you can find us. Subscribe to the Yahoo Sports YouTube channel as well. We're there every Tuesday and every Friday, so come rock with us. You can follow
me. You can follow him on social media at Nikias NBA. You can follow me at Steve Jones 20. And for that, we say thank you, adieu, au revoir, adios. We're out.